One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. This is show one, number 177. We're coming at you as we always do every Wednesday night from the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, right on the 50-yard line of the Southside Irish Parade. We're brought to you by Madden Funds. Our old pals, Mike and Danny Madden, local 150 operating engineers, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Kerry, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness is good for you. Boy, we got a great show tonight. As you well know, this show is dedicated to our Irish first responders, our cops, paramedics, firefighters, and nurses, because we believe they are the modern-day equivalent of our ancient mythological Irish warriors. And we are here to salute them and honor them and hear their stories. We got a great guest tonight. My favorite show on TV, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but the one show I do watch is called The First 48. It's on A&E, and it's different police departments across the nation, and they're interviewing homicide suspects, and it's just a terrific show, and it's been on for like 20 years. Anyway, Jason White, probably the star of he's a Tulsa homicide detective from the First 48. He's been on, I think, almost 100 of these shows. Terrific guy. And I reached out to him. We didn't have a guest tonight, and he agreed to do a telephone interview with me, which I recorded yesterday. So let's give a listen to Jason White, Detective Jason White, homicide detective from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hey, we're talking with Tulsa, Oklahoma homicide detective Jason White. 23 years, Jason?
23. It'll be 24 in July, so just around the corner.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so where'd you grow up? First of all, let me explain to our audience, you're kind of a big deal. One of my favorite TV shows is The First 48. And how long has that been running? Years, right?
Well, it started filming back in 2004. They started filming with us in July of 2014, and they've been filming here ever since. So they've been with us quite a while.
And how many do you keep track of? How many times you've been on the show and everything? Or?
Well, I think I've been on 77 episodes, and
Wow. They're
about ready. Yeah, for me personally, I think it's the third most in the history of the show. The other two guys are supervisors, so they show up to a lot more. And then I think it's the longest for any city to be on the program without a break. I think that the total number of televised episodes I think the record is 118, and that is Miami. And I believe that we're close to 110, if not 111 or 112. So we're really close to probably surpassing them and being the most televised city, which I don't know if that's a good thing or bad, but we're solving a lot of cases, so that's good.
It makes you think Tulsa is a tough place, I can tell you that.
Well, I think Chicago's got it on us.
Oh, you're not kidding. That's awful here. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in California. I was born in San Jose, and I lived kind of in the Sierra Nevada mountains a little after that, and then my dad got on the highway.
Was your dad a cop?
Yeah, he was a highway patrolman for California in the
70s. Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we ended up moving to Oklahoma, and we got here back in 1982. So, I mean, I've lived in the Los Angeles area and then up in Northern California and such, and then we ended up moving to Oklahoma in 1982. And I remember, you know, I was 12 years old, and every day I would tell my parents I hate it here, and the moment I turn 18, I'm moving back to California. And
how many kids
before
in your
really
family?
Crazy. Just me and my brother. He's about 6.5 years old. His name is Travis. Travis White. He works in the industry, kind of. He's like the main legal guy for the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics. So he worked as a prosecutor. He's more of the prosecutor type, and he's worked
for
the DA's office.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is. He's a law enforcement agent of some sort. He's just the guy that's in charge of prosecuting people. So he just does it for the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics now. So we're both in the industry. So as a matter of fact, today we were both teaching together, and that's the first time that's ever happened. So
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because he lives down in the Oklahoma City area, and I live up here, and he came up here to teach a segment of this class before me. About search and seizure. He's kind of a guru in that area.
And
of course I was talking about more of the death stuff. But yeah, it was fun. I don't get to see him as much as I should.
Are your folks still alive?
They are. They both live down in the Oklahoma City area, actually in Yukon, Oklahoma, which is known for being the home of Garth Brooks. It's just west of Oklahoma City. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what are your Irish roots? You told me you're Irish. Do you know where you're from?
I am. Well, I'm. I've been told my. Let's just put it this way. I got told my whole life that I'm Irish and German.
Oh, okay.
And after I got one of those
DNA tests back, that's usually a disciplined drunk.
Yeah. So when I got the DNA test back, because my mom got me one of those for Christmas, I am definitely Irish. And I'm definitely English. I'm English and Irish. And that's pretty much almost everything about me is I'm English and Irish. And actually, when I talked to you that last time, just kind of meeting you on the phone, it prompted me to look up my name. And I was like, well, I wonder where my name originally was spelled W-H-Y-T-E. And they got tired of it getting misspelled. So they changed it to W-H-I-T-E. And so when I was kind of researching it, going, you know, I wonder how popular the last name White is in Ireland. And
I know a lot of Irish guys named White, actually.
Yeah. It's actually the 50th most common name in Ireland.
Oh, no kidding.
For a last name. Yeah. And I've got Hales in my family, too. I don't know if Hale is necessarily – I know it has to be because my grandmother was –
H-A-L-E?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And she definitely was your prototypical Irish, the lady that was the glue to the family kind of lady
that was just super loud.
Is this
your aunt?
Lady. My grandmother. Yeah.
Oh, your grandma. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you know what? Yeah. When I was a kid, I went to all Catholic schools and everything, and. When somebody screwed up, when a kid got expelled or something, he was always sent to Cashel Hall. Is that still there?
It is still here, yeah. It's kind of one of the expensive schools. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a boarding school for dopey Irish kids that go there.
Yeah, and kind of, I mean, I think you deal a lot with first responders and stuff, right? So
absolutely.
That's kind of,
the show is dedicated to Irish first responders, yeah.
Yeah, so my great-great-uncle, who, you know, long since dead, but... he was kind of a famous firefighter, and actually, if I would have got into the firefighting industry, he was the fire chief for Kansas City from 1882 to 1902, chief, he was responsible. He was world renowned. I mean, he was responsible for he had like 50 patents and just a real inventor in the industry and such, and well known still in Kansas City. I would think that if I opted to have been a Kansas City firefighter, I think because of the ties to him, I probably would have gone on.
Have some clout there. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, when I went into they have a firefighting museum there in Kansas City, and years ago I'd went in there and I told them who I was, and they're like, they could see the resemblance, so they didn't doubt it one bit. Yeah.
Now, before you were a cop, you were also a surgical technician?
Yeah, I started out... when I got out of high school, I started out at the burn center in Oklahoma City. So It's the fourth largest burn center in the country. And if you were burned anywhere in the state of Oklahoma, you'd likely meet me. And basically my job was to do dressing changes and stuff like that on the burn patients. And then from there, I ended up attending a course, and I became a surgical tech, which is the guys, basically, if you've ever watched MASH or any movies that have any surgery scenes, they're the guys that are next to the surgeon that's basically slapping the instruments in their hands or helping on the surgeries and stuff, and that's what they do. Yeah. It was a good job.
So you're a paramedic as well then?
Well, like I was an EMT. I was the basic EMT. I ended up getting my certification the last semester of my senior year, and I think at the time I always kind of wanted to be a homicide guy since I was a kid, that was kind of the job that I really, it was like my dream job, and it just took, you know, you kind of get sidetracked, and then I started working in the medical field, and I think really there was, you know, between the Oklahoma City bombing and the O.J. Simpson case kind of motivated me, probably along with Waco, that kind of motivated me to really give it a shot and to try to get on a law enforcement agency. Back in the days when people actually wanted to be a police officer, and
we'll get into that. I want to discuss that with you too. You're kind of the star of the show because people identify with you. You're the average Joe, but you're. It's amazing to watch you because you're so laid back, but the mind is always going. I want to ask you about one episode I watched recently. I remember it. There was a girl, Tiffany Wesley. You remember that case?
Yep, I do. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
She's a young lady that basically was involved in a tumultuous relationship with her boyfriend, and I think there was a lot of domestic drama going on between the both of them. A lot of fighting, arguing, probably some mild assault both ways. Yeah. And it really culminated one night where she was getting whipped up on, I'm sure, and she had thought that he was going for a gun, and she ended up shooting him in the head. And really kind of a sad situation. I'm kind of a softy anyway. I mean, literally – some of these people, you know, I know that they didn't wake up that day with the intent to kill somebody. And it's just for whatever reason.
A young lady who obviously he'd been beaten on her a long time.
That, drug issues between the both of them.
Yeah.
And just the ingredients for disaster. And you know, the tragic part about her case ultimately was that she ends up getting involved in that, and fortunately, she ended up getting just 10 years for that.
She was kind of guilty to manslaughter. I remember that. Yeah.
And I was kind of pulling for her to get more of the lesser type, like 10-year variety. But unfortunately, while she's been in prison, her mother ended up getting murdered. That happened in Tulsa as well. As a matter of fact, while we were looking at the mom's Facebook page, I had no idea that it was even her mom. But as I'm looking at her mom's page, I was like, holy cow, that's Tiffany Wesley. And I wonder if that's going to be her mom. And sure enough, it was. And just a lot of tragedy that's surrounded that family in the last five or six years.
Is she still in jail?
She is. With that manslaughter charge, she's going to have to serve 85%. And that's basically, eight and a half years. And so she's getting close to, she's probably got another year or two, and then she'll be out. Yeah. They may end up interviewing her in the future because some of these cases actually they're starting to revisit a lot of these older cases that they filmed here for kind of the spinoff, which is after the first 48, which is kind of an interesting
it's
show.
Fascinating, you know, it is. It really is a fascinating show. You know,
it is. It gives you a little bit. You know, they kind of rejuvenated. They restarted that show. That show hadn't been aired in a long time, and then they restarted.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of interesting because not only does it get a little bit more of the perspective from our end, but more importantly, it really gets more of the family side of it. And you get a little bit more about the victim and how it affected the families. And not just the families, but sometimes the defense attorneys talk. And I think it's always interesting to hear what they have to say, or even a juror, you know. So it's
and
neat
a lot
when
of
able to show that.
You follow it all the way through the trial and everything, right?
I do. If it's one of my cases, it's just kind of one of those personal things that I do if I can. If I'm not, if I'm not supposed to be somewhere else, or I really do try to if I'm not sitting in the case as a case agent, which happens on occasion, but sometimes our schedules just do not allow it. But if I'm not doing that, I definitely, after getting done testifying, I definitely like to sit there and sit in for the closing arguments. And I'll sit with the family until the verdict comes back. And and I really don't stop worrying about these cases until it comes back from the Court of Criminal Appeals, which that usually comes back six months to a year later. And then we know that the job is done, and because they're going to get appealed. Every one of them they're going to file an appeal, unless they took a plea bargain. If they took a plea bargain, they won't have the option for that. But so, yeah, I mean, I do. I like to see it all the way through. And you know, some of these families, believe it or not, you know, we kind of adopt them, and they kind of adopt us. We share in part a little bit of a. It's the worst part of their life, but it's kind of weird, but we're almost like the guide that kind of helps them through it to some extent. It's part of it that a lot of people don't realize, that it's a lot of the phone calls that we get from the families that doesn't get televised. You know, and
you know, well, that's
just
one of the things I like about the show, is that when you catch the guy, and you know, he's arrested or he cops to it or whatever, you call the family and say, we got him, you know, and they're so thankful, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we try to do it in person.
Closure.
There are times when we try to do it in person. Sometimes we just want to tell them as quick as possible, just because we don't want them to hear about it on the news and the way social media is and stuff. We want to have that personal moment with them. To where they know from us personally, as opposed to hearing it through the grapevine. And you know, it's a big deal. They need to know, and they usually have some questions, but you know, it's a big deal, because it's one of the few jobs that honestly we really, the people that, you know, they have our number. I mean, they can call us anytime.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
That's pretty unusual, unprecedented access that you have to a police officer. I don't know of any other units to where you really can call them at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And occasionally my wife kind of gets irritated about it, but I'm like, you know, listen, you know, that's what we do, you know, and sometimes they just need to, sometimes they just need to talk. I do.
How many kids do you got?
Well, we have hers, mine, and ours. So I've got a stepdaughter and a stepson. They're both adults. I have two boys of my own that are from my previous wife, and then my wife and I, and her name is Tina. My wife Tina and I, we have a daughter together who just turned 17, and today was her last day of her junior year. Next year she's going to be a senior. And. And we have a grandbaby too. We've got a grandson. So
good for you.
Four.
Yeah. And do the kids watch the show?
Not really.
Or are they allowed to watch the show?
They are. They are. And I'll tell you what. I think that they're just not as interested in watching me at work than.
Sure.
Yeah, you would think that they would be interested, but they're not. And my two boys that live down in the Oklahoma City area, I know that they catch episodes periodically, and they've told me that they do. But no, my daughter's really not interested. You know, I'm not a big deal to her. I appreciate the compliment. I will tell you this, that at the end of the day, you know, I'm just one of the many detectives that's part of an exceptional team. And I couldn't be. Yeah. You know, we've just got a really, really good team. And
you know, when you watch the show, you know, there's like Kennedy. Ronnie Leatherman, is that his name? It's a great cast of characters, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all so different, but also dedicated, and everybody's on the same team trying to find the bad guy. It's just a joy to watch the show.
We are. We all treat the case as if it was our very own. And you're just not the chemistry. I say this all the time in our unit that. When they have, you know, Ronnie Leatherman's actually retiring here in a couple of weeks, which is kind of, it's an end of an era. He's been somebody that I've worked with very closely, probably closer
which
than
one is this?
In the unit. Ronnie Leatherman.
Oh, Ronnie. Yeah, Ronnie, sure.
Yeah. Ronnie's going to retire. He he's got about 22 years on the department, and he's just done. He's just done with this career, and he's going to move on, and he's going to still work for the city. He's just going to do.
He's kind of a young guy. Yeah.
He is. He's going to work for the city as a crime analyst, but he'll be a civilian. Oh. And so he'll be working in a little bit of a different capacity. So it's not like he's disappearing, but you know, it takes a toll on us. I mean, you know, it's a lot of long hours. Right. The older you get, the harder it is on your body. But what I was going to tell you is this: the key. I tell people this all the time, and I'm always running my mouth basically, but I basically say, you know, when they're going to look for replacement people, I don't really care what they necessarily look like on paper. I'm more interested in working with somebody that's going to be a great fit chemistry wise, you know, we're going to get along with them, that they're trainable and that there's somebody that's eager to learn and willing to work. And if you have all of those characteristics with somebody, I mean, it can be unbeatable. They have to be a team player. That's what's crucial. And we've seemed to have had that for many years, and it's a good thing. And it hasn't always been this way. I mean, it's you get different people in there, and you're going to get a whole different feel to it. So, and as things happen,
nobody's got an attitude. That's the thing. Everybody's, you know, they're rolling with the punches. It's a great show to watch. Now, tell me a little bit about the crisis negotiating when some guy goes wacko and he's got the hostages. You're the guy they bring in, right?
Well, I was. I'm not a per se a crisis negotiator any longer. I did that for about 10 and a half years. I was a member of the SWAT team and basically did that for a long time. I've been lucky enough to teach, or to at least do present. I'll be teaching in Orlando in a couple of weeks, about crisis negotiating stuff. And I've been all over the country talking about crisis negotiating. So I've been really fortunate in that respect. But so I still kind of keep my hands in it. I still kind of help them from time to time when they're teaching stuff with respect to crisis negotiating. But I'll tell you something, Mike. It's one of those jobs that it's a part-time position. You know, we trained a couple of times a month, but I was on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year for that job, unless I'm literally out of town. But my point is that on top of already being on call with whatever I was doing, it can get really taxing. And there were times on occasion where we have a murder and then we have a call out, and it's like you're
What's
kind
a
of
call
in a
out?
Dip.
What is
a call out? Like for instance, let's say that I was out on a murder and we ended up having a SWAT situation, and they needed a negotiator, or they had somebody that was armed and barricaded in somewhere else in the city, and I'm kind of torn. You know, which job am I going to do tonight? It's one of those things that I never really found a supervisor that really embraced you being a part of both, just because it's just they're both extremely taxing and time consuming. But I still keep my hands in that end. You know, I'll tell you a little secret is that, and any Chicago guy would probably tell you the same thing. The number one tool that we have in our toolbox as far as being a cop is the ability to communicate with people. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can talk and listen, then you've got it made in this business.
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed in the scenes where you have the suspect or maybe a potential witness, and they're in the room, it's just you and them in the room, and you're treating them like human beings, you know?
Yeah.
There's no hard-ass good cop, bad cop act. It's just... Look what happened, you know.
Look, that works about
a lot of them spill. Then, you know,
that works about 3% of the time.
Yeah.
If they don't like
you,
if they don't like you, why in the world would they tell you anything? You know, and that there was a guy. One of the favorite things that I like to tell people is that I met a Phoenix cop years ago. This guy was a gang police officer for 20 years in Phoenix, and this guy was just incredible. He was one of those cops that you just look at him and you're like, man, this guy's got the it factor. You know, he was made to do that job. And he just told me, he goes, listen, I'm going to tell you the secret, and don't ever forget it. And I was like, oh yeah, what's that? And he goes, respect. Never ever disrespect these people. And I'm talking about gangsters or criminals, or just be respectful. And really, he's right. And it doesn't say anywhere in the rule book that you can't be nice to people. You know, if they allow you to be nice, you can be nice. You have to. You kind of have to. And I'm not advocating back rubs in the community. I'm just saying that you know, you sometimes you have to be kind of firm with people. But in reality, look, it's a stressful situation, and we are looking to get to the truth. And the nicer you are, it just seems to be. Well, maybe it's just because I'm doing this for a long time, but I just don't sweat the small stuff. And the longer I do it, the nicer I get. And I just want people to tell the truth.
You know, I have a theory just from watching the show. When the guy's in the room by himself, when they pull their arms into the sleeves of their shirt, they're guilty. And they do it. Well, they all do it. It's like, what's
it's kind of cold in that room. It's kind of cold in there. And it's not.
Well,
but
it's
I gotta say,
to be, obviously. Yeah.
Well, it's really not by design. But I hear people complain about it all the time. Going, man, it's cold in here. And it's like, well, I mean, we're not doing it deliberately. I don't know why it's kind of cool in there. But I mean, there may be some truth to that. I you know, a lot of people say when they're sleeping, and because they can fall asleep in there, considering that they're at a homicide unit. You would think that they'd be freaking out and bouncing off the walls and just really freaking out. But in fact, I think what happens is it's actually the opposite. You got people that have almost like they've been on the run, or their bodies have just been so worried and freaking out and had so much stress on their shoulders because of what has occurred that they almost just fall asleep. So that's almost like, I mean, I couldn't stand in court and say, yep, they fell asleep, they're guilty. But in reality, we see it a lot. And I think that there's probably some truth to that.
And the other thing is when they may be playing dumb and what am I here for? And then the cop says, you're here for a murder investigation. In other words, this is it, pal. That wakes them up.
Well, it's supposed to. It's supposed to. Some of them it still doesn't. And you're just like, you know, there's been a couple of times, it's been on a couple of episodes where you're like, hey, man, wake up. This is a big deal. And, what you do here could affect the rest of your life. And a lot of times jurors are watching
and
that.
And you guys
later
say
on.
That to them. You say that. The decision you make now, it's great stuff. Now, but my impression, I mean, that there's a lot of dirt bags in Tulsa. Don't mean to insult your town, but it's like,
no, not at all. No,
but of course they're all murderers. So,
well, we catch a lot of people. I mean, if I was to give you the statistical numbers, I like to start off with 2016. 2016, we had a record year of homicides in our city, which was 82. And out of those 82, we solved every single one of them. We had 100% clearance rate that year in 2016. And then the next year, we had 82 again, and then we solved 80 of those. If you were to take from 2016 to today, we've had roughly 268 homicides in our city, give or take a few, either way. Out of those, we've solved all of them with the exception of about 20 to 25 of them. So we've cleared about 96% of the cases. So we're the 47th largest city in the country. I know that Chicago's huge. What is it, number two? I think you're the second biggest in the country.
Second
I can't remember.
City, it's called. But the other thing is, well, and I wanted to get into this. We have a state's attorney here who is nuts and just lets these guys out. They're out on – murderers are released are on their own recognizance. It's crazy. They're not on the side of the police, and the police are taking a real tough beating here. It's awful. I feel so bad for them because they don't get any support. Now they can't even chase anybody. There's no foot chasing allowed, all this other BS. It's just
insane. It's a different world we're living in. I mean, the only exposure that I have to that is, you know, that district attorney Mrs. Fox that I saw with the Smollett.
Yeah, Kim Fox. She's a complete moron.
And I don't understand. I mean, you know, listen, nobody cares what I have to say, but I really feel personally. I feel for the guys that work up there in Chicago, and I don't really know. I might know a handful of Chicago guys that, and I mean, very little. I don't know them well, but I feel for them because. I can't imagine what it's like to work in a city. We have the luxury here in Tulsa where our city government is behind it. Not everybody probably, but for the most part, the mayor and the city and really the citizens are behind us. And we've got an exceptional relationship with the vast majority of the public. Other than
and
the,
that's
the, you
know, why you're solving all those
cops.
Murders, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, hey, here's the deal. If people, you're not going to solve cases off DNA and fingerprints. I mean, that's rare. Okay, you're going to solve cases because of the people telling you what's up, and a lot of that you're relying upon witnesses to, in a sense, put their neck out there for maybe somebody that's not really a savory character to begin with, you know. And
you know what?
In today's
I did want to ask you that before we go. You have a relationship with informants, which I think is interesting. Tell us a little bit about that, how they can help.
I think with any cops, if you've been doing this job for any length of time, and, you know, we build a reputation too. I mean, there's people that I get people that are like, man, the cops, you can't trust the cops, da 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 da. And I'm like, well, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you knew, if I was one of those cops, and the same thing's for Chicago, I mean, you get up in Chicago, I guarantee you there's cops that have worked in certain neighborhoods almost their whole career, and they know everybody.
Yeah. Sure.
And they're the kind, they're going to get information far faster than somebody that works in the homicide unit. Maybe they're going to tell a beat cop that's because they trust them. And then it's the same thing that goes for us. I mean, and like I tell these guys, I'm like, listen, if I was some dirty cop that you speak of, then my name would be dirt out here. I mean, you would know it. And if we operated like that, because it doesn't take but 5 minutes for the word to get out that you're some cop out here that's, and I'm not saying that we have them out here running rampant because we don't, but you get my point, is that people, they get to know who you are, and that's one of the advantages of being on the show, honestly, is they kind of get to know who you are, and they see that we care about people, whether they're a bad guy or they're a good guy or regardless of whatever the victim was doing, we still want to solve that case as if it was anybody, some innocent victim or some guy that was dealing drugs. We want to solve the case. And I think that people, by and large, they really appreciate the fact that we actually care, and that pays dividends for us at the end of the day. I mean, we go to some of these neighborhoods that are plagued with crime, and we show up and we don't get the same treatment necessarily that a guy in a marked police car is going to get. We get the, hey man, what's up, you know, and let me get a pic and stuff like that. And that's kind of cool, because especially in today's day and age where, you know, you have a lot of, I think we're coming out of that downward spiral. I think we're starting
I hope so.
I really do. There's moments when I'm like, man, I probably should have just tried to be a firefighter. But at the end of the day, I really still love what we do. And I hope that the vast majority of the public, let's face it, the vast majority of the public wants the police out here, and they want us to be able to clean the streets up. They're just not as vocal as the ones that are against what we do. And we're not out. Listen, you got more of a chance of getting victimized probably by a priest than you do one of us. Literally you do. So, I hope you don't get any flack for that.
We have interviewed close to 200 cops now over the last 3 years, and most of them Irish cops. And one of the things that impresses me so much, and I always ask, well, why'd you get into it? And they invariably tell me, I wanted to help people. You know, it's as simple as that. And that's a great testament to, first of all, the character of the Irish and to our police. It's just terrific that they feel, and that beating they've taken in the media and these idiot politicians, it just pisses me off. And we're working on a film right now called Irish Cops Under Siege, and we're hoping to put a spotlight on that whole situation.
Good.
But that's down the
Good.
Line.
You know,
anyway, I want to let you know how much we love the show. Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate it. I was just going to say, I mean, honestly, if you think about it, there's 17,000 law enforcement agencies in this country. And then when you think about how many cops that are out there in this country, I don't know the exact number, but we're talking tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe, I don't know, but a mother load. And then you have one instance that happens somewhere USA. Okay. And that, it just tarnishes it for it. We all suffer from that. You know, I hate it when we have an individual on our department that does something stupid and they're in the media. It's like, okay, here we go. I mean, we all get looked at as we're that guy, you know, and you know, it, we are constantly working with the community. We're constantly working with underprivileged people. We're constantly in inner city schools. I'm doing things like that where I'm talking to kids that are in summer programs that are on the verge of joining gangs, you know, and stuff like that, trying to be a mentor to some of these kids. And people just don't get to see that. They don't realize that we do a lot of exceptionally good
things.
And
the media doesn't help on any of that, even though the media is responsible for your show. Have they had the same producers on the show all those years?
Actually, technically what happens is that it's the film crew that actually films it is under ITV. ITV is a huge, huge company. I think they're based out of England, if I'm not mistaken, but they're huge. And then what happens is that they've been filming the show since probably its inception. And then they sell episodes to A&E. A&E puts out an order, they like what they see, and they continue to do it. I think that one of the reasons, in spite of all of the kind of the craziness when they were pulling different police shows off of there, is that on our show is that we're reactive. We're not proactive necessarily. We're more of a reactive. The crime happens, we go to it, and we do what we do, you know. And
you're real. That's the other thing. It's the real thing.
The real deal. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing how the investigation unfolds, and that's it's interesting. I mean, listen, I liked the show before I was a homicide guy. So, I have my favorite cities and places that I find, you know, interesting to watch. And, you know, personally, I'm kind of a Mobile fan as far as the
Mobile
cities.
Alabama. Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of like a mini us. They're like a mini Tulsa. The way they work as a team, it's kind of fun to watch. And Gwinnett does a good job too. But you know, those other cities, any of the cities that you see on there, they're there for a reason because each city has exhibited that they have an aptitude to solve these cases, because that's the premise of the show. They you know, they want to show.
If they didn't, you wouldn't have a show.
Right. Well, sure. Exactly. Yeah. And then again, you're going to have a city that's willing to have you there. You know?
Yeah.
And
I have no idea what the situation with Chicago has been approached or anything. But I'll tell you what. If you ever get through Chicago, you got to come and see us and come on the show, okay?
I'm gonna, Mike. You're gonna be the first person I call if I ever go through Chicago.
Good man.
And I will definitely be more than happy to meet you at the pub or wherever you guys meet. And I'd love to meet some of your friends. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, pal. Thank you so much. I want to tell you, we salute you. We have
Mike,
so much admiration for you, and we're praying for you all the time. Okay.
Hey, well, that's always a good thing. I appreciate it. I thank you, and great to meet you. Hello to all the people that are listening, and my prayers go out to the people that work up there in Chicago. I mean, I can't imagine, but know that us police officers that work elsewhere are you're definitely in our thoughts, and we're there for you as well. So, stay safe.
Thanks, Jason. God bless you, pal. You stay safe,
right,
too.
Buddy.
Talk to you
always.
Soon. Thanks, buddy.
See you, buddy.
God bless.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And that was the amazing homicide detective Jason White from the Tulsa Police Department. Just a terrific guy. And what a great guest. And tune into that show if you've never seen it. It's just fantastic. It's on A&E, the first 48. And so kind of him to give us his time. And for all you Chicago coppers out there listening, he's on your side. All right, we're going to take a little break here on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste recycling and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey everybody, this is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back some more Hibernian Radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
Cops and firefighters risk their lives almost every day, so they shouldn't have to risk their hard-earned dough in any get-rich schemes or the blather of old pals in the real estate biz. And good luck trying to figure out the stock market or cryptocurrency or even economics 101 when you come home exhausted at the end of your shift. What you need is somebody you can trust, and they're in short supply these days. Hey, take it from me. I've lost fortunes in showbiz because I thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I wound up bankrupt and broke. It took me a long time to decide to find a friend I could trust who had my family's best interests at heart. That friend was my late pal, Joe Madden. I met him as he passed the basket at St. Luke's, and I'd turn my pockets inside out as he came to my pew, and I'd say, "I'm tapioca." He laughed, but didn't stop him from supporting my films and showbiz endeavors over the years. Joe Madden had my back. A few years before he died, Joe started Madden Funds with his sons, Mike and Danny. The Maddens and Houlihans have been pals for a long, long time. They can advise the best path for your investments. Madden Funds will have your back, too. Need advice on your 401k or your rollover IRA? You can trust Madden Funds to help you protect and grow your investments now and in your family's future. Go to their website, maddenfunds.com, or call Mike or Dan Madden at 708-848-3200 and tell them Hooli sent you.
And we are back on Hibernian Radio. What a great night tonight. I want to especially thank Detective Jason White of the Tulsa Homicide Unit. And big deal tonight, Saturday, May 28th. It is my 44th wedding anniversary. Me and the lovely Mary, 44 years ago, we got married at St. Malachy's, the Actors' Chapel in Manhattan. And then everybody proceeded to walk. We had a piper pipe us over to Sardi's, where we had our reception. And then partied over at the Plaza Hotel. So what a great night, and it's been a great marriage. And I don't know, she's a saint. She's a saint. God bless her. The lovely Mary Carney. Okay, I want to also remind everybody about Rib Fest is coming up Monday, June 13th. The annual Rib Fest and Awards Night at the Chicago FOP Lodge 7, Lodge number 7, 1412 West Washington Boulevard. Beverage specials, dinner provided, award-winning barbecued ribs along with roasted sweet corn salads, full menu of icy cold beverages, and there will also be a whiskey tasting at this event. Also, the Larkin and Moran brothers, our pals, and the bagpipes and drums of the Emerald Society will be performing. It's a great night. I hope to see you all there. It's only $20. Come on. So that's coming up Monday, June 13th. Mark that on your calendar. Also, you know, we do every year our annual, and it's coming up, the 8th annual Irish American Movie Hoolie. We are moving to the Lake Theater in Oak Park for the first weekend, September 16th, 17th, and 18th. And then we head over to the Wilmette Theater in Wilmette for September 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Because we wanted to bring the film festival right to the Irish American community, but also, it ain't looking so good downtown lately. So I don't want to be down there this summer or even in September. Also, so keep your, we'll give more info. Oh, the other thing I want to give a shout out, in July, we're going to do a little fundraiser warm up for that at Trinity High School. We're going to screen a great Irish American film by Preston Sturges called The Great McGinty. If you've never seen this, terrific, and won the Oscar in 1940. We're going to play that film and get everybody revved up about the festival in September. So look for more news on that. And don't forget AIR 2022. Myself and Emer Arkins, the 10-time world champion fiddler, dancer, singer, and the Chicago Guard of Pipes and Drums. We're all going to Ireland. We're going to Cork. We're going to Dingle for 3 nights. We're going to Dublin. We'll be at the Fitzpatrick Castle to see our old pal Etna Fitzpatrick and her son Mark. And it's the trip of a lifetime. Oh, I can tell you that. If you need more information, call our friend Brian Fitzgerald at 1-800-664-7474. He'll give you all the details. It's only $2,100, land only. But you can hang out with me and Emer and the Chicago Guard of Pipes and Drums. And there's usually quite a few characters on these trips, so we hope you can join us. And that's all the plugs for now. So, you know, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue, I look in the window, Ken's, Ronk's, Hearts, or any of these great Irish saloons, I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through their misty. He says to me, "Hey, holy, who died?" Mary Hayes, 90, beloved wife of the late Edward and loving mother of Mary, James, and Breda. I love that name, Breda. She was the cherished grandma of 7, native of Ardfert, County Kerry, Ireland. God rest her soul, Mary A. Hayes, 90. Timothy Ryan, fond brother of John, Terrence, and sister Mary Rita, retired Honolulu police officer. There's a gig, huh? Veteran of the United States Army, 25th Infantry, volunteer for Whitewater Lakes Lions Club, and friend to all animals. Well, you could say that about me. Said to say, have a heart of a lion, that heart suddenly stopped, February 12th. February 12th. Well, he must have died in February. Anyway, a massive Christian burial will be held at St. Augustine by the sea in Honolulu, Hawaii. God rest his soul, Timothy P. Ryan. Robert P. Collini, 92, a resident of Hoffman Estates, formerly of Chicago. Born in 1929 to Edward and Eleanor. He passed away peacefully May 13th in Elk Grove with his loving daughter Kathy at his side. He's the adoring husband of 65 years to Marlene and loving father to Maureen, Ann, and Kathleen Mary. Last surviving brother of 6. He was preceded in death by Edward, Jack, Donald, William, Patricia, and Jane. Bob was a United States Army veteran serving in the Korean conflict. He was one of the original buggy whippers at St. Hubert Church and volunteered at St. Alexis Hospital in Hoffman States for over 6 years. God rest his soul, Robert P. Collini, 92. Patrick Moran, or Morin, as they say in Ireland, age 81. Beloved husband of Genevieve Joan, a loving dad of Scott, Ron, Larry, and Lisa. Also survived by nieces, nephews, relatives, and friends. He's a member of the IBEW Local 134, electrical inspector for the village of Bridgeview, and a member of the International Association of Electrical Inspectors. God rest his soul, Patrick Moran. Walter McCarthy, age 81, longtime resident of Lamont, beloved husband of Mary, cherished father of Walter, Patrick, Colleen, Michael, and David McCarthy, fond uncle of many numerous nieces and nephews, and a longtime member of the Plumbers Union Local 130, and longtime active member of the Knights of Columbus. God rest his soul, Walter McCarthy, 81. Mary P. Burke of Bancha, County Tipperary, beloved wife of the late Nathaniel, a loving mother of Patricia, Margaret, Valerie, Natalie, Stephanie, Edward, and Kevin, and the fond sister of Seamus, and the cherished, devoted grandmother, great-grandmother, and friend to many, God rest her soul, Mary P. Burke. And that's about it. God rest her soul. Let's close up the crypt, and we'll be right back with a couple of jokes on Hibernian Radio. So stick around. History going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind, and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRocque, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.IE.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery, or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
And we're back on Hibernian Radio. Hey, I want to also thank, once again, Homicide Detective Jason White from the First 48. And want to salute my lovely wife, the lovely Mary Carney, on our 44th wedding anniversary tonight. We're probably going to head over to Chipotle for a big night out, you know. And I got a couple of jokes. But we don't have to do the Hooli Town thing. I'll just tell and speaking of wives, a wife says to her husband, our new neighbors are so in love. He kisses her, he strokes her hair, and he hugs her. Why don't you do that? I said, because I don't know her that well yet. Okay, where's my drip shot? Okay. All right. Now, many of you husbands will relate to this. A man comes home from an exhausting day at work and plops down on the couch in front of the television and tells his wife, get me a Guinness before it starts. The wife sighs and gets him a Guinness. 15 minutes later, he says, get me another before it starts. She looks mad, but she fetches another Guinness and slams it now next to him. He finishes that one and a few minutes later says, quick, give me another one. It's going to start any minute. The wife is furious. She yells at him, is that all you're going to do tonight? Drink beer and sit in front of the TV? You're nothing but a diabolical, desperate, mangled, midden, and further. The man sighs and says, it started. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Who's on next week? Jimmy Dunn next week. And we're looking forward to having him on the show. Thanks again to Detective Jason White and all our pals out there in law enforcement and the firefighters and the paramedics and the nurses. God bless you all because you are the modern-day equivalent of our Irish mythological ancient Irish warriors. And we will see you later. Bye. Oh, Lord, I wonder, will I look down? Shoes.